With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
My guest this week co-stars in the best show of the summer, if not the whole year. But if you recognize her, it's probably from celebrity impressions like this one.
It was revealed on Thursday that the California woman who gave birth to octuplets this week already has six other children.
Hey, sweetie.
What? Oh. Angelina Jolie. What are you doing here?
I heard someone had eight babies. Does she want all of them?
I think she does, yes.
Where's Amy?
Oh, she left.
Did she take her baby with her?
Yes, she did.
Too bad. I could always use a new baby.
So, are you excited about the Oscars?
Bye.
Okay. Angelina Jolie, everybody.
This is The Last Lap. I'm Matt Wilstein from The Daily Beast, and that was Abby Elliott as Angelina Jolie with Seth Meyers on Saturday Night Live. So, Abby is still probably best known for her four seasons as a cast member on SNL, where she impersonated celebrities like Meryl Streep, Zooey Deschanel, Anna Faris, and so many others. Now, she has returned to the screen after a bit of a break from acting to play Carmi's sister Sugar on The Bear, a show that I could not stop thinking about after I burned through all eight episodes in two sittings when it premiered earlier this summer. So I was so excited to get the chance to talk with Abby about The Bear's first triumphant season and her hopes and dreams for season two, including the Chicago-based actress she would choose to play her and Carmi's mother. Hint, it's yet another celebrity she impersonated on SNL. We also get into the advice her father, comedian and short-lived SNL cast member Chris Elliott, gave her before she joined the show, and how she dealt with getting let go by Lorne Michaels before she really had a chance to find her footing. I really, really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you do as well. So here's me with Abby Elliott. So, yeah, I mean, I think we have to start with The Bear, which I am become, like a lot of people, very obsessed with. I just finished watching it for the second time through, and I think it was like seeing all new stuff, and it was so fun. I think for me, it's just like the best show of the summer, of the year, by a mile, and you're so good in it. And so, yeah, and congrats on the season two pickup as well. It's very exciting.
Thank you. Yeah, we're super thrilled over here. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's just people really needed this show right now. After the past couple of years, you know, we've been deprived of a lot. And I think everyone has suffered. And the show is, you know, goes into like the grief and humanity and relatability and just, you know, also trying to keep up. It really explores so many different aspects of what, you know, humans are going through right now. So it's really exciting to be a part of something that, you know, has really like touched so many people, you know, like it's like the first time that I've kind of been a part of a project that people have really responded to in the sort of way that wasn't, you know, it can't be like.
I was going to ask, did you feel like you were kind of waiting for an opportunity like this, a show like this to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it was the first job that I had going back after having my daughter. And so.
Well, congratulations on that as well.
Thank you. I was in this like, you know, just sort of already in this vulnerable state of, you know, having her during COVID and, you know, just. I really wanted to do something real and grounded. And, you know, I also really liked popping in it and being able to, you know, have a life on the side as well. That was great. And yeah, as soon as I read the script, I was like, this is it. It wasn't all consuming, which, you know, I've taken jobs that have been like that for me before. So yeah.
How did it come your way? Did you audition, or did you know someone involved, or how did it happen?
I auditioned a couple times with Chris, and everything was over Zoom. And yeah, I mean, I just like really, I really connected to the material right away. And this character, this, you know, female character who is really like, her name is Sugar. You know, she's sweet. She's like feminine. She's trying to keep her family together, and she's really strong and resilient. And, you know, I like really related to that at the time, and just, you know, trying to hold everything together and help her brother. And yeah, so when I read it, I immediately knew, and I talked to Chris and Joanna, and Joanna and I have known each other for years, and just felt like the right thing at the right time. So
yeah. It's funny. It's like, I feel like people are having a hard time categorizing the show, and it can't really be categorized. Like, it's a half hour show, and it is really funny, but it's also like, you can't just call it a comedy at all. It's like stressful and dramatic and intense. And you obviously, you come from a comedy background. I know Chris comes from a comedy background, directing comedy specials and all that. So is that appealing to you as well, doing something that kind of doesn't fit in that that comedy box, but is also has that in it as well?
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like, you know, I feel like audiences are just, have just gotten so much smarter, and they, you know, you can smell bullshit a mile away with, you know, a lot of comedies now. And I think like the story people get really invested in, and when there are funny moments, it's such a breath of fresh air on the show. You know, cause you're like in it, and you're in Carmi's like world and in his head. And then, you know, when something funny happens, it's just, it makes it funnier because it's so real and dramatic, and because you really believe him, you really believe the story. I mean, Jeremy is such an amazing actor. I could watch him do like almost anything. You know, he's just, he's so good.
Did you have conversations, you know, while filming about tone or how funny to make something or how much to lean into comedy and those kind of things?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was really on the page. It was just, my stuff was very just real, and just a sister reaching out and, you know, kind of begging her brother for, you know, for him to get help. And I think like, you know, there were some things that jumped out at me, like, okay, a soft, shitty bitch. Like, I call him that in one of the scenes, and I'm like, that's such a weird, specific, funny thing. I think, yeah, I mean, I think just playing that character, like playing just like a real fucking human, and finding the moments was just so, you know, appealing to me. So
yeah, there's one scene, I think, where you're on the phone with him, and you know, he's telling you about all the insane things that he used to do at his old job, and you respond like, well, that's chill.
Yeah. When did the breathing problem start?
I think maybe sometime in New York. I was throwing up every day before work.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds chill.
I kind of dug it.
You dug throwing up?
No. It was awful. Chef was a piece of shit.
But why'd you stay there?
I don't know. People loved the food. It felt good.
Chefs always say a big part of the job is taking care of people, right?
Yeah, no, I guess.
Okay, well, you can't really do that if you're not taking care of yourself then. And I like when you tell me things. I'm asking you to look at the thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to ask for help.
That's like, that feels like one of those very real moments that's funny, but also just feels like a real interaction between siblings.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, that's what, you know, I would say to my sister, and, you know, and it's that thing of like, okay, that's chill. Like, you know, I want to fix this for him. She has so much more underneath, you know, and she's really just trying to keep calm and hold it together. But I think it's a struggle and yeah, that moment of like, fuck, I guess. Yeah, that's chill. Like, okay, you know.
What do I do with that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I feel like that she's like, her hands are tied a little the whole first season.
One scene that really stood out rewatching it and also, I mean, stood out the first time is that flashback scene with John Bernthal as Mikey. And is it true that you guys didn't know it was going to be him until like you were already filming and into the season?
Yeah, no, we didn't. And I think he was out here. So we were in Chicago the entire time and he was working on a show out here. So we took, you know, the crew and ended up filming that one scene out in LA. Yeah, yeah. And that was like the final thing that we did. And, you know, it was just such a like clincher for the season because, you know, he's a strong presence, right? And so like at the end of shooting everything to like go in and shoot the scene with him, you're like, oh, like that is the reason for everything. It makes so much sense. And, you know, my character obviously is the middle child and is like stuck between Carmi and Mikey a little. And I feel like that scene kind of shows that too.
The point is, we're out all night. We're drunk as shit. We're fucking high as shit. We figured the only place is still open, of course, Ceres. And being 6:45 in the morning, we are right to assume that the place is going to be a fucking ghost town, right? No, fuck off, sugar.
Get
we are not doing raisins.
Raisins.
Don't do that.
Mom,
I don't want to. We're not fucking doing raisins. Okay. Anyway, cousin, was it a ghost town?
It was not a ghost town.
Not only was it not a ghost town, it was a fucking rager. It was fucking packed. It was just like, right? All fucking Blackhawk fans. And cousin, who was there?
Savvy.
Oh!
Get the fuck out of here!
Savvy! Dennis, motherfucking Savard, number 18 in the house!
Yeah, is he as charismatic in person as he is on TV?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah,
He's really wonderful.
He's such a good actor.
Yeah, it was a perfect, you know, the perfect kind of cameo like that, which doesn't always work, I feel like. But when you realize that's who it is, as you said, it does really all make sense.
Yeah, yeah, he's such a presence and he's so charismatic and that's why he, you know, sucked all these people into his world and, you know, and ultimately like a lot of people like that, they, you know, they end up using drugs or whatever, you know, and you just like know that person, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It does seem like there's so much potential for season two on all kinds of levels. I mean, obviously like, in a way, the first season is this prologue to what the Bear is in
totally.
The restaurant.
It's a prelude.
This new restaurant. I love. There's a lot of like characters that are mentioned that we haven't met yet, and one of them is the mom of the family, who I imagine could be a part of a future season. Did you think about that at all? Just thinking about who this mother character is, because it seems like it could be a very crucial figure in their lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. And thinking about, you know, Chicago actresses too. Joan Cusack came to mind. Like
that
would
be great.
Absolutely. When we were shooting, Chris Witowski, who plays Pete, my husband, on the show, we went out for lunch and we ended up in her shop in Chicago.
Shop, right?
Yeah. She has a boutique and, we talked to her and it was just like, cause I did her on SNL and I did her in my audition and, you know, Chris was very much like, hey, are you Joan? And I was like, no, please, no. And she turned
really
around
like that in real life,
who's
too.
Asking? Oh, totally. He is. And, you know, and then I was like, oh, hi. Like, I'm such a huge fan. I did you on SNL and, you know, I want you to know I was out of love. And she was so sweet, like gave some toys to us and for my daughter. And
was she like aware that you had done her on SNL or was she kind of just living in her
she
own
was
world?
Yeah, yeah, but she is very much living in her own, like she does not want to, you know, to be an actress really anymore. And but I think that playing
my mother, this would be a thing to come back for, right?
I mean,
I mean, wouldn't that be cool? I don't know. That would be very, very cool.
Yeah. Do you, I mean, in this first season too, it's like you exist pretty outside of the restaurant and everything going on there. Did you have some FOMO of like not getting to be in that world as much as some of the other people on the show?
Yeah, of course. And I mean, I think, you know, it would, like, my stuff with Jeremy is just very slow and, you know, soft, and it takes you out of that.
a moment to breathe.
You need
nice
like
sometimes.
A moment to breathe. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's for me, like I would watch the restaurant stuff, you know, like in table reads and rehearsals when I, you know, went to the stage and kind of like, just like, okay, oh my God. Okay. Over there. Oh, okay. Like this is chaotic. Like, how do I keep up? And also when you're watching it and the camera isn't right there, you're like, you miss it. Like it just essentially looks like a kitchen. So I think I didn't, until I saw the pilot, I didn't fully understand what was happening back there. Which, you know, I think was good because I think my character, you know, I think Sugar really doesn't get it, you know, and, this is this shitty beef restaurant that killed her brother. And, you know, she, I think in the last episode, when we're all having the family dinner, it's like the first moment of, okay, I see what you're trying to do. I acknowledge that this is bringing you something, helpful in your journey of grief. But I think up until that point, it's just like, what the fuck are you doing? You need to go to Al-Anon. Like that's, you know,
yeah,
that's how you deal with it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think Sugar also, like, I think her grief is so, like, stifled. I think that her doing these things, checking it off a list, like, Al-Anon, okay, I'm going to do yoga today. That's going to help me in my journey. Like, that's what her, as a woman, like, that's her way of dealing with it and bottling up. Like, I think she hasn't really broken yet, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you feel like once the restaurant becomes the Bear, presumably in season two, that she could be more involved in that? Or would you want to do that?
I would love it. Yeah, absolutely.
I did wonder whether she's at that dinner where they just opened all the cans, but I wondered how aware she is of the money that they just found and what they're going to do with it.
Right. Yeah. I think he hasn't opened up to her yet about that. In true Carmi fashion.
Coming up, Abby breaks down how she started doing celebrity impressions when she was just starting out in comedy, and later opens up about the time she almost single-handedly screwed up SNL's season finale cold open.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This episode of The Last Laugh is brought to you by Vanderpump Villa, a new reality show starring Lisa Vanderpump, now streaming only on Hulu. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabel, a glamorous estate in the French countryside. Meet the elite staff as they work, live, and play together 24/7 while dealing with rivalry, romance, and misadventures. As they try to provide once-in-a-lifetime experiences for their guests, the staff will need to meet Lisa's high standards. Not everybody has what it takes. Watch new episodes of Vanderpump Villa every Monday, now on Hulu. If you're enjoying this episode and want to hear more, please make sure you are following The Last Laugh wherever you get your podcasts. By subscribing to The Last Laugh, you can listen to my conversations with other SNL alums like Bill Hader, Will Forte, Anna Gasteyer, and Rachel Dratch, along with everything else from our free archive. And you'll be the first to hear new episodes when they drop every Tuesday. And while you're at it, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Let us know how much you love the show and who you want to hear next. Now, back to Abby Elliott. So I do want to spend some time talking about, you know, the earlier part of your career and sort of how you got started in the comedy world, because this podcast generally focuses on comedy. So how did you, you know, what were sort of the first steps that you took towards this career?
Well, you know, my dad is an actor, Chris Elliott, and he, you know, growing up, I've always idolized him. And I, you know, I was in all the plays and whatever. But, I started at Marymount Manhattan College in theater and was like, I need to drop out and go to LA because I, you know, this is my youth. And, so I moved to LA and I started UCB and Groundlings classes, and I joined a sketch group at UCB called The Midnight Show. And it was like James Adomian and a bunch of super talented. Yeah, he's great. And I was kind of their impression girl there. And I was really young. I was 20. And I was living in a house.
How did you start doing impressions? Like, why was that the thing that you were doing then?
I don't know. I was living with my aunt and uncle in Thousand Oaks and like driving in every day. And my cousin Carson and I would just like hang out and make stupid videos. And, you know, I was like, oh, I could do a Kirsten Dunst impression. We had just seen something, you know. And I remember it was when I was living in Thousand Oaks that I like did my makeup to like try and look like Angelina Jolie. And I mean, it was just like a funny thing I did. It was never like, yeah.
Well, it's funny. You were doing it before everyone was doing that on Instagram and TikTok, right? Which is now like how people get on SNL is
do those
impressions and put them out in the world. And
Yeah. No, I was just kind of doing it for fun. And then I was like, well, you know, maybe this could be something. And I was into SNL at the time. I was watching it a lot. And I had done UCB in New York and I had met Bobby Moynihan and he got on the show and, Casey Wilson. And I felt like, okay, like maybe this is something that I could, you know, get. And so I auditioned, I sent in like, you know, every impression I could do, like think of. And some of them, I was like, okay, I'm not even going to include this. This is like a one-liner stupid, you know, and, you know, just character, like just anything dumb that I could think of. And they asked me to do more and I did. And then they called me into audition. And that was a whole experience.
How was the audition for you?
I mean, it went well. They didn't really laugh. I mean, there were some things that they laughed at. I did Joan Cusack, Anna Faris, Angelina Jolie, Katie Holmes. Did an impression.
A lot of ones that ended up on the show.
Yeah, totally. And some characters that did not end up on the show. For better or worse. And then after I like left the stage, someone said like, good job, Abby. And then, you know, I got the call, Lauren wants to meet with you. and met with him, and just like my hands were like that and
shaking.
Yeah. And it was just like, I just remember taking a shot of whiskey after and just like, oh my God, like, is my life about to change or am I just going to go home? You know?
Yeah.
And
yeah. Once you meet with Lauren, that's a pretty good sign that it's happening, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so I flew back to LA. I was living there and turned on my phone after the flight, and I had a million missed calls and messages, and like everyone knew before I did.
Really? It was been like announced in the press before you knew?
I think it was announced the next day, but Lauren had actually called my dad
before you knew
to ask permission
to ask for your hand.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. How did that conversation go? What did your dad tell you about that?
I think he said something like, I know she's young, like we'll cultivate her talent. And, and my dad was like, okay, yeah, I mean, it's great. But my dad was also very much like, you don't have to do this, because he had an experience there that was, very different. And
I interviewed your dad, a few years ago, I think when Clara's Ghost was coming out.
Yeah.
Which I loved, by the way. And I had so much fun watching that movie and so much fun talking to him. And so we talked a little bit about this and his time at SNL. And I know he kind of famously didn't have a very good time there. I think he turned it down once and then did it later and only did it for 1 year. So how did that whole experience with him affect your, interest in doing it, or your fears about doing it, or any of that?
It really didn't that much. Like, I was just very driven and ambitious at that time. And my dad, I knew that he was in a different place in his career when he went to SNL, which he had already had his own sitcom and his own blockbuster movie. And he was a little more of a personality and a household name, and he, had a Tostitos deal, and it was like, it was just a very different thing for me. I was like, oh, I'm taking this is literally the only opportunity I have.
Yeah, and it's a pretty good one.
I had done a couple of voices on King of the Hill, and it's a good one, and doesn't pay much, but
yeah, that's not the point, I guess.
Yeah exactly. But yeah, it yeah, I had to take it, and I was 21.
Now you were the youngest woman ever cast, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And yeah, I mean, it in a lot of ways, it was like my college experience. I was there for 4 years. I didn't go to college, so I didn't. I dropped out. But so this was, just a huge learning curve for me. And yeah, I mean, it was hard. It was really rough. Like, I thought that I was really tough and like could take it all. And, now I'm dealing with it in therapy, but it was kind of this thing of like, how much can I take at this show? Can I take another week of not being in sketches? Like that kind of thing. Like, I think now having a family, I've kind of learned a little to detach emotionally from certain things, but I didn't know any better then. And so I was really putting myself through it and really putting pressure on myself. And and then you'd have a good week and you'd be riding that high, then.
And then it's just start over again.
And then you start over again. And then, and for me too, like I was single in Manhattan and I could I had my own apartment, and that was just like a whole, like I was learning how to be a human as well, yeah. And dating
and you're sort of getting famous at the same time
and getting famous and being recognized for being on this show. It was also the first kind of like Twitter, everyone's a critic kind of like Twitter had just kind of started. It was 2007. And
yeah, I mean, to put it in perspective, you started, didn't you start just after the 2008 election when the Palin stuff was happening? So it was this very big moment at the show. I mean, it was right after Tina Fey's whole
It was
run.
Right after Tina did Palin, and Amy had just left. And Casey came in, and I started I started in November.
Which is strange, but I guess they were kind of refreshing after the election, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
And Amy left sort of midway through that season.
Yes, yeah. And that's what it was. Like, there was just this, like, exodus. And then they hired all these new people. And Kristen was kind of the, like, senior female there, like, cast member. Yeah. And, you know, so I started with Michaela Watkins, who's fantastic. And... And you know, we both had very different experiences, because she came in with years and years of, like, Groundling stuff under her belt, and she, like, got a ton of stuff on, and her experience was just different from mine, because I didn't have that. I didn't have, you know, that training or that confidence, honestly, to feel good. And really, I was confident on air, I think, because I had to be, but at the table reads and, you know, asking writers to write with me, like, that's where I just, like, couldn't handle it. Like, I just couldn't, you know, perform to the best of my ability when I, like, was running on little sleep, and when I'm like, drinking too much, I'm, you know, all the, you know, and the thoughts of, like, oh, all these people think of me as this young person on the show. And, like, do they think I just got on because my dad? And that was hard. Like, the nepotism stuff I tried to ignore. But when it came down to Saturday night, I do feel like that's when I was like, okay, I can do this. You know, this is the fun part. This is when I just get to entertain an audience.
Did you ever sort of get to compare notes with your dad in terms of, like, his experience versus yours and how they compared?
Yeah. I mean, we talk all the time. We're really close. So he sort of knew what I was going through, and he would help me with sketches, and, you know, and then I'd bring them to a writer, and they would help, you know, they'd be like, oh, okay. Yeah, I guess, like, I don't know. But, like, I'm like, no, my dad wrote this. Like, you know,
yeah, I was going to say, did you say that, or did you not want to say that?
I don't know. I probably said it. I don't care. Like, I didn't have, I wasn't a writer when I started that show by any means.
But you're forced to be.
I was forced to be, which, you know, I'm grateful for that, because I do feel like I learned so much, and now I really like writing. But, at the time, you know, I would call my dad crying on, you know, writing night, and just like, why is it 2 a.m. and there's nobody helping me, you know?
Yeah. It seems like the impressions were the thing that you really did thrive at the show. I mean, it's something that they always need, and, you know, there's always a place for it. You did a lot of the celebrities in Weekend Update desk pieces with Seth Meyers. Are there any of those that kind of stand out to you as ones that you think went really well or that were fun to do?
Yeah, I mean, I really like doing Meryl Streep on Update, and I did a Meryl Streep at Madison Square Garden ice skating Christmas show commercial parody, which was really fun. And I'm trying to think. I really like doing Sarah McLachlan singing about sick dogs. Yeah, that was fun.
Sarah, I have to tell you, I am so excited about Lilith Fair.
I am also so, so excited, Seth. Lilith Fair means so much to me. But there's something else I want to talk to you about, Seth.
What's that?
The dogs.
Oh, no, 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 no,
the
no,
The dogs,
no, no.
Seth. Dooby-dobby-dobby-day.
We talked about this, and you agreed you weren't going to bring up those dogs from those creepy ASPCA commercials.
Seth, all the dogs you are about to see are dead or about to die.
No, don't show the dogs.
The arms of the angel. This dog's house is in foreclosure.
No.
Fly away from here.
Oh, I hate these commercials.
It's funny you mentioned, running into Joan Cusack, because I'm always curious about sort of the interactions with the real people that you're impersonating. And you'd even do it on the show sometimes with the person there. Like, I remember there was one where you're doing Zooey Deschanel, who's doing Mary-Kate Olsen.
Yes.
Then there's the Anna Faris monologue that you did with her.
Yeah.
What are those experiences like to kind of be there with the real person who you're impersonating? Because that must be strange.
It is strange. I mean, everyone's a really good sport about it to your face. And then you kind of are like, did they enjoy that? And, you know, if someone had done that to me, I don't know if I would have enjoyed it. I do think, like, you know, Anna was a great sport about it and Zooey. I think that, like, it is this thing of, like, so I did Brittany Murphy on Weekend Update, and it was 2 weeks before she died. And it was, I adored her, like loved her, worked with her on King of the Hill and had a great experience with her. And, that was, you know, it was really difficult. We pulled it immediately, but that experience scared me a little with going forward and doing impressions. And,
yeah, I mean, I think just, especially as you get more sort of in that world yourself too, it must be kind of like you see it from the other side because you were so young doing it at the beginning where you're not probably thinking that much about how it's affecting these people.
No. And, you know, I didn't personally write it, and it was in the same vein of like the Whitney Houston, like that's how, like, you know, the Whitney Houston kind of like, and at that time, like that kind of, it's not comedy essentially. It's just calling out pop culture and calling out things that you see in Us Weekly. Right. And, so it was just horrible. And that really kind of steered me away, I think, from, you know, the lightness of impressions and,
yeah,
you know,
it
going
made you think about it in a different way.
Yeah. And just like, okay, I, you know, these are humans. And, it's, even though it seems like it's like tabloid fodder to us, you know, it's like, this is real life and it's really scary. And, you know, and my heart was broken after that.
How did you feel about leaving the show after 4 years at the time? I mean, was it something, I imagine it was not your decision to leave, but how did you feel about it?
You know, I was kind of ready. I had gotten this sitcom pilot that then I got fired from. And so I was going to shoot the sitcom during my off week. And for whatever reason, they recast me like after I had gone to LA to shoot it.
Was that a show
so
that actually
to, like,
went on and happened, or?
It went on for a season, yeah. But then it got canceled. And so I had to go back to the show and go like, Lauren, I'm so sorry. I, you know, this was a mistake and I'm happy here. And, you know, can I finish the season? Can I keep going on the show? And I think after that, he was like, okay, I'm going to let her loose. And,
Because
you
just sort of,
but,
you saw that there were other things that you wanted to be doing, or?
Yeah, and I really, really wanted to act, and just, it just wasn't right for me. Like, my characters just never, for whatever reason, whether it was my confidence at the table, like, they just never hit, and I don't think that anyone really trusted me to do a big character on the show. I think the impressions were one thing, because I could do that, and I felt safe
it was
in.
It was your lane.
Yeah, and so I think he kind of knew that I would be happier doing something else at that time, and I had been there for 4 years, so that's enough.
Yeah.
You know?
I was looking, is it true that your last episode was also Kristen Wiig's last episode? Yeah, that must have been kind of odd. Did you, and you knew it was your last episode, but probably
I didn't know.
Oh, you didn't know?
I didn't. I had a hunch.
Because you found out, you thought you might be coming back, but then he.
Yeah, I didn't know. And then it was like, you know, kind of a couple of weeks before the season premiere that Steve Higgins called me and said he's not bringing you back. And it was like, okay. And I think I just like ate pizza and drank wine in bed for a week and did not get up. And then I went to Italy and ate more pizza.
And did that again.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so yeah. And you know, I love Kristen. She's amazing. But that kind of summed up my time there of like her send off and my last episode,
send off is like legendary of the, you know, getting serenaded by the Rolling Stones. And then I think there was a massive party afterwards, right?
Yeah. It was, yeah.
Like a larger than usual party.
Yes. Yeah.
Not the worst last show to have for you. I mean,
no.
It's a fun one.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, she deserved it. And she was amazing on that show. And a friend to me. And, you know, so it wasn't that. It wasn't that I was like, you know, jealous. But it was more just like, okay, I'm definitely the underdog here and the underutilized, you know, for whatever reason. And that's okay. You know, I figured out how to be comfortable with that after the fact, I guess. Yeah.
After the wine and the pizza.
Yeah, that helped.
How did you, you know, think about what you wanted to do next once you, you know, got back from Italy and looked at, you know, what you wanted to do? I mean, because now you could kind of do anything, but you're, you know, you're always going to be a former SNL cast member, which I think is so funny. It's like, it's hard to get past that in a lot of ways.
It is. Yeah. I was lucky. I got to do an arc on How I Met Your Mother right after SNL. That was a really good experience for me. Because it was nurturing. Pam Fryman directed, and she's absolutely just the kindest, most wonderful director, TV director. And she really built up my confidence a lot more than anyone had in previous years. And, so that was a really good experience. And Craig and Carter and just that cast, that made me feel like, okay, I can go into the pilot season now and feel good and feel funny and feel like I can act on a sitcom and do my thing. And, so that was really great for me. And then it was pilot season, and I forget where it was that pilot season or what had come out of it, possibly nothing, but.
Was it after SNL that you did that Inside Amy Schumer sketch, the compliment sketch, which I just rewatched and is one of the funnier things that was on that show?
That was right after SNL, actually. I think I flew back for that. It was like the dead of winter. We shot that outside. And
it's Nikki Glaser's
in it. That was one of her first. And Greta Lee. That was one of her first kind of big sketches that came out of Inside Amy Schumer. And I love Amy. She's amazing.
Oh my God, Britt, you dyed your hair. It looks amazing.
Oh no, you're just being nice.
No, seriously, it looks great.
No, I tried to look like Kate Hudson, but ended up looking like a golden retriever's dingleberry.
But you, look at your cute little dress.
Little, I'm like a size 100 now. Anyway, I paid like $2 for it. It's probably made out of old Burger King crowns. I look like a whore locked out of her apartment.
Hi.
Amy.
Hi.
I love your hat.
Are you drunk? I look like an Armenian man. People are trying to buy carpets from me.
Excuse me, when did you start working for NASA? You're weightless.
Fuck you, I'm a fucking cow. Indian people are trying to worship me. I sleep standing up in a field. Fancy meeting you girls here.
Of course, I see everyone when I look like Susan Boyle's toothbrush. Ew,
looks so pretty.
That was really funny. It's like one of those sketches that probably would never have been on SNL, but was so perfect on her show.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it was definitely, I mean, it was female forward. And I think now it probably could be on SNL because they've kind of broken out of the like stereotypical sketch format. But yeah, that was, that show is groundbreaking.
I want to make sure we have time for our final segment, but before we get to that, I'm just looking, you know, beyond The Bear season two, which, you know, is so exciting. Is there anything else that you, you know, really want to do that you haven't gotten the chance to do yet? And are there things that you're like gunning for?
Honestly, I really want to work with my family again. My sister, Bridie, who did Clara's Ghost, we have an idea that we've been developing and it's gone through many changes over the years. And yeah. So, you know, to be able to do that would be really great. But, you know, I want to do movies. I want to do it all and have a family and, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah. I want to have it all.
Yeah, exactly. All the wine and pizza.
So now it's time for The First Laugh, which is our final segment on the show. And I want to start by going all the way back to the beginning and the first piece of comedy that really made you laugh hard growing up as a kid. If you can remember something that you really connected with.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think it was, we had a VHS of the Gilda Radner, like the best of, and that really made me laugh. You know, Roseanne Adana and Emily Litella. Litella.
Yeah. Classic.
And then my grandfather, Bob Elliott, he had a comedy duo and they did a special with Jane, Lorraine, and Gilda. And yeah, and they sang, "If you want my body and you think I'm sexy," with them in the back. And it was like very just like there, like these two old men singing, like very flat. And I remember thinking that was really funny.
When's the first time that you knew you were funny, that you could make other people laugh?
I think it was when I performed a monologue from After Miss Julie in high school that was met with more laughs than intended.
You weren't going for laughs.
Yeah. And I think, you know, my dad always had us doing plays and he would record my sister and I doing shows and plays and like always made us feel like we were funny. And I think that, you know, he had a huge impact on me feeling like I could be funny.
Yeah. I always ask comedians about their late night debuts. And I believe you were on Letterman in 1988. Is that true?
Yeah, I think so. was I?
What's the story behind that? Do you remember? It's on IMDb.
Is it?
I assume it was with your dad.
I think it was probably, so my dad met my mom at Letterman. And so I was like a Letterman baby and, I bet they cut to me in something, but I was definitely in the audience of his FDR one man show, as like a toddler. We went on Letterman as like my sister and I, when we were like 12, some Conan appearances, which was really fun. And honestly, like, I don't even know how it happened. Like, I think it was just Brady and I begging our dad to like take us on TV with him. So it was really fun and thrilling. And I remember like going into school after, you know, the Conan thing and being like feeling really cool, even though it was like, so I think the bit was like Michael Jackson had his kids in masks or something like from the paparazzi. And so like, it just cut to us in the audience, like wearing masks. So you couldn't even see our faces, but
you're like, I swear that's me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have a story or memory from your career that makes you laugh now, but really was not funny when it happened?
Yes.
I love how quickly you answered that.
The season finale of my first season at SNL, it was Will Ferrell was hosting, and it was a Meet the Press sketch parody, and it was a cold open. It was Daryl Hammond came back to play Chaney, I want to say, and Will Ferrell was playing Bush. And I at dress rehearsal, Casey Wilson comes out with, you know, with papers, and she has the first line of the scene. And it's like, okay, Mr. Chaney, you're about to be on Meet the Press. Here's something you need to sign, blah, blah, blah. And then I come in as a makeup artist, and I'm like, how do you like your makeup? And he's like, whatever. They do the sketch.
Seems like a weird way to start a sketch.
Yeah, I know. But it made sense. I'm not describing it. Yeah, yeah. It was more just like setup, exposition. Is this your first time on Meet the Press? And then, so when we went to air, Daryl's sitting there in, you know, his costume, and I'm over as the makeup artist, like by the makeup station, you know, on the set. And I'm like doing my makeup, like getting ready to say my line to him. And, you know, they're like, and 5, 4, and then you're on. And so I'm waiting for Casey to enter, and I'm just like, taking her a second. Okay. You know, I'm like, okay, what can I do? Like busy work while she, like, I'm like, oh, this makeup. Oh, wow. Okay. That consistency is nice. You know? And then I hear Jenna, the stage manager, Abby. And she's like pointing to the cue card. And I'm like, okay, like Casey's has her line. She's coming in. Like, I don't want to. And I literally, I don't know. In that moment, I was like, I just walked over and read the cue card. Yeah. And it was like, so Mr. Chaney, is this your first time on Meet the Press? I just started saying the lines on the cue card. And for whatever reason, it clicked in my head in that moment. It easily could not have, but it clicked in my head in the moment. Okay, Casey's line has been cut from this, and now
nobody
it's yours.
Told you.
No one told me you have the first on-air line in the season finale.
Oh my God. That's insane.
And it was the most like adrenaline nerves like my body, I think, has ever gone through. Like it was truly, I just like burst out crying after. Yeah.
That's horrible.
Luckily, I don't think I was in anything else that show.
Yeah,
so
yeah. You could take a break.
I had the whole show to cry. And
that's incredible, and it is funny now.
yeah, and if you watch it, it's you know still online and stuff. So if you watch it, you can hear like Abby, and
definitely
you see that split
that
second where I'm like, and now it's like in retrospect, I'm like, it's not that big of a deal. I was being dramatic, but
yeah, well, it's a high pressure situation.
So, Mr. Chaney, this is your first time on Meet the Press with David Gregory.
It is.
Great. Now, how do you like your makeup?
Enough color so I don't look like a corpse, but not so much that it looks like I have feelings.
Okay. So, can I get you to close your eyes for me?
Hey, makeup lady, give me that brush.
I'm sure working on SNL, you meet, you know, so many famous people, so many, you know, comedy heroes. Do you have any stories about meeting one of your comedy heroes for the first time, whether it was at SNL or anywhere?
Honestly, Joan Cusack was really like, she like is truly
recently.
My comp. And that was recently. And, you know, she's amazing. And she's so, her perspective on the business is just, I mean, it's hilarious. And refreshing at the same time too. She's just like, it's embarrassing to care about your weight. This is embarrassing. What am I doing? You know? And I was just like, oh, you're so cool. I want to run a boutique and, you know, be
gotta,
just like you. But
we gotta start the campaign to get her on the Bear. I don't know if it's too late, but
I know. I really, yeah, that's my goal.
Oh my God. Finally, I want to ask my guests what's making them laugh right now. So is there something that you've seen recently that made you laugh that you thought was really funny?
The Real Housewives Ex-Wives Club. it makes me laugh, and I'm just truly obsessed with it. I need mindless, you know, TV. And yeah, I mean, my cousin is now on SNL, and he makes me really laugh. He's a part of Please Don't Destroy. His name is John Higgins. He's hilarious on that show. So that he always makes me laugh. But yeah, I would say Real Housewives and John Higgins. Yeah.
I know. I'm all psyched for the Please Don't Destroy movie now. They just announced.
Yeah, I know. It's so exciting.
Conan and Bowen Yang and Meg Stalter. And that's going to be exciting. Very cool. Well, yeah, you have even more family connections to SNL than I realized.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Maybe your daughter has a future on the show, or?
I hope not. I mean, for her sake, and you know,
that's fair.
But she will do whatever. She's very headstrong, and you know, she's amazing and already hilarious. So
awesome. Well, thank you so much for doing this, and it's really great to meet you and talk to you. And
thank you. Great to meet you, Matt.
Yeah, and good luck with everything.
Thank you.
All right. Just a huge thank you again to Abby Elliott for that incredible conversation. She is just an absolute delight. All 8 episodes of The Bear are streaming now on Hulu. So if you somehow haven't watched it yet, or like me, just want to watch it again and again, please check it out there. If you want to support The Last Laugh, please help us out by leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. We want as many people to hear this show as possible, and you can help by spreading the word and sharing it with your friends. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Wilstein and at thedailybeast.com. And if you're not already, please follow at Last Laugh Pod on Instagram, where you can see photos and videos from all of our episodes and see who is coming up next week on the show. The Last Laugh is distributed by Acast for The Daily Beast, with audio production by Jesse Cannon. Our theme music is by Claude, who you can find on Instagram at claude.mp3. You can find this show every week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, you can find show notes and highlights from each episode on thedailybeast.com. See you next week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.